Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you today. It is Thursday, the day before the jobs number. What will they possibly bring? What will the geniuses make of this report? We already know that they have no idea of what's going on. We already know that they are totally out of their mind. We already know that none of them got the common sense gene, because if they did, we would have been out of this mess long ago. So what do we have in store for us? I don't think it really matters. I think it comes back down to, does the Fed raise rates or not raise rates? If they indicate, if the numbers are really hot or really good, according to whoever, then the Fed will be raising rates, which should send the markets down. If the numbers are really bad, it means that we're in trouble. Now, we already know we're in trouble. I mean, who are they kidding? I really don't quite understand it. I mean, it is so crystal clear. I mean, the one simple number, which we talked about the last couple of days, is payroll tax. If they're not collecting payroll taxes, people aren't working, or they're not making as much money. It's as simple as that. But yet, we've got to get these geniuses all together. You got to get 12 geniuses. What do you think that costs us? What do you think it costs to get 12 plus staff into a room? Okay. I mean, are you kidding me? Look at what do we become here? Okay. I like it better if they disband them and reorganize. I just don't get it. But in the meanwhile, interesting week. Did we bottom? Was that really the bottom? On the double bottom of 1810 the S&P, now that we're flying back to the upside. You know, I know all of the fundamentalists are telling me how good all the reporting information is, but I don't know. I when I build a house, I want to make sure I have a strong foundation. And I'll tell you what, I would not want to buy the house that they're building. This, to me, is one of the biggest house of cards that we have ever seen. I mean, this to me reeks of, like, you know, one peg gets pulled out and down she goes. You know, it's like Howard Cosell. Down goes Frazier. I don't really understand what they're thinking, what's behind what they're thinking. Because quite frankly, I think that the central banks are idiots. Okay. I mean, I don't know if you listen to any of that G20 crap from over the weekend. But, you know, don't manipulate your currency. Yeah, right. We're not going to manipulate our currency until the next time. You know, it's such a simple thing to understand that the common sense that lacks is it's really frightening. If you think about basically probably, you know, IQ wise, I mean, probably at the top of the charts. And yet, such a simple little task. How do you fix my business? And it could have been fixed so easily that I find it just unbelievable that we're still 7 years later, we're still talking about it. I'm still burned up 7 years later. I need like 1,000 blood pressure pills because it's so illogical. And the damage is frightening, okay? I mean, and I'm not talking about the damage we're going to get once we do give up the ghost and the market does collapse. Because, well, look, this is not me wreaking fear. I don't do that. This is me telling you that that's a mathematical certainty. But the damage being done underneath the surface right now as you and I speak, our farmers, the producers, the whole everybody who produces a product and goods is getting hammered because of these ridiculous policies. It just doesn't, it's again, it's an illogical formula that never worked, has never worked, will never work. And that is the overall problem when you look back and when these genius economists look back at time and say, oh, this was a bubble. This was the bubble era. Well, all they do is create bubbles. You know, it's amazing that it's such a simple solution. And it's scary. And again, I don't care about the stock market day to day. I mean, I care because I trade it day to day. But I care about the economy year to year. I care about what's going to happen to the youth. You know, we have enough problems in this world right now. Okay. And I'm not even talking about, you know, things that go on, you know, that are serious, serious problems. But this is a serious, serious problem, which is we are, I think, in my opinion, destroying the youth of America with technology, with not having to communicate hand to hand or face to face. And we're creating nothing. We're creating technology, but we're creating the lack of relationships, the lack of contact, and all this over what? You can't continue at a pace of what you're doing because it all ties together, and the lack of what's happening, the lack of jobs, the lack of everything makes it even that much tougher. And, you know, I just have to tell you that to me, it's a scary world out there because there isn't the opportunity to go out and do your thing because you can't get money. You know, today I was at a meeting at a bank and I was talking to the bank. He says, you know, you guys are jackasses. You don't want any money. They go, well, why should we? How can we? There's not enough for us. And that is what creates the deflationary scenario that we're in, is the lack of money in the hands of the right people. When you continue to give money to the rich, okay, they don't circulate it because they circulate what they always circulate. You know, we've had this conversation in the past. The wealthy do what they do no matter what. They don't care. They, you know, they're not affected by troubled times. The entitled are not affected by troubled times because they get what they get. The only ones who are affected are the main drivers of the economy. And that, I think, is criminal. That is what will break down the country in time because you can't keep pushing down people that want to be above. And when it all boils down, and it comes out in the wash, that will be the problem in this country, is when the middle class finally revolt. And they will, eventually. I mean, again, you cannot keep pushing them down and hoping that they don't. I think it's a tragedy. I think it's very tough, and I think it's stupid, because the people that are running it are stupid. And I'm tired of it, and I'm sick of it. But, hey, you know, it's a good thing I got you guys. I can share my voice, and I wish I could have run for president because I would try to fix it and not be involved in all this stuff. But anyways, this is the Bubba Show. We're going to step out here for a break, but you know, make sure that if you ever miss an episode, go to libertytalk.fm. We put the podcast up every day for you so that you can hear me bitch. You can hear what's going on in the world. And I want to make sure that you can be a part of it. I'm going to step out of here for a break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with you. And, you know, we haven't heard from our friend Bill Will for a while, and he's got some interesting tales to tell. And Let's start out with a story time on Hillary Rodham Clinton, as Bill denotes from a children's book. Here we go.
Well, hello, potential future rapists and little girls. It's your Uncle Bill, and once again, it's story time. Now, today, we're going to read the bestest book ever written. It's called Hillary Rodham Clinton, Some Girls Are Born to Lead. So, let's get started. Now, look, right at the beginning is a picture of Hillary Rodham Clinton at her university campus, riding her bicycle in a big hurry because she doesn't want to miss watching the girls' volleyball team practicing. So, let's begin, shall we? In the 1950s, it was a man's world. Only boys could grow up to have powerful jobs. Only boys had no ceilings on their dreams. Girls weren't supposed to act smart or tough or ambitious, even though deep inside they may have felt that way. But in the town of Park Ridge, Illinois, along came Hillary. She would show those boys that girls could be leaders too. Without Hillary to lead the way, there would have been no Oprah Winfrey, no J.K. Rowling, no Margaret Thatcher, no Billie Jean King, no Betty Friedan, no Indira Gandhi, no Benazir Bhutto, no Eva Peron, no Rosa Parks, no Eleanor Roosevelt, no Coco Chanel, no Helen Keller, no Amelia Earhart, no Simone de Beauvoir, no Susan B. Anthony, no Gloria Steinem, no Marie Curie, no Sojourner Truth, no Jane Austen, no Queen Victoria, no Harriet Beecher Stowe, no Catherine the Great, no Elizabeth I, no Joan of Arc, and no Cleopatra. It's all because of Hillary. Now, after college, Hillary entered law school so that she could work for justice. Most future lawyers were men, and only boys could be lawyers, make illegal real estate deals, illegally cash in on insider information, lie under oath, and make mysteriously hundreds of thousands of dollars in a few days under suspicious circumstances. But that didn't scare her. She didn't care about what the boys said. She just went out and did it anyway. They thought Hillary would land a high-paying job in Washington, D.C., but she didn't. Not yet. Instead, she went to Arkansas to be with Bill, her law school sweetheart. The two loved politics as much as they loved each other. They decided to spend their lives and serve America together. Bill loved Hillary so much that every night he would have sex with different women, trying to find someone he loved more than Hillary, and he never did. And Hillary loved Bill and politics and America and women so much that when many of those women complained that Bill's love for Hillary and politics and America became so great that he would grope them and have sex with them against their will, Hillary was the first in line to call them a bunch of filthy whores and destroy their lives because of her deep love of Bill and America and especially politics. Hillary was a new breed, a superwoman. But sometimes it was hard, like when she had to rush out of the courtroom under sniper fire to call the babysitter about her sick child, or when she heard the nasty things people said about her because she doesn't take time to paint her toenails or style her hair. Hillary has never had her hair styled once in her entire life. She's just too busy fighting for justice. And because Hillary is a champion of the poor, she saves money by not buying things like clothes and instead has all of her pants and jackets and tops made from sheets of matching triple knit polyester industrial strength tarpaulins, and she gives the money she saves to underprivileged and needy women from all around the world. It was hard for Hillary a few years later when she helped Bill campaign to become president of the United States. But as first lady, she did things that previous first ladies had never dared to do, like being the first lady ever called to testify before a grand jury regarding destruction of documents from the Rose Law Firm. At the end of Bill's term, Hillary finally got a chance to run for office, to become a senator from New York. Why didn't she run for office in her native Arkansas? Well, it's because people in Arkansas already knew how much she loved Bill and politics in America, so she packed the Oval Office carpet into a bag and flat broke with little more than $300,000 in the furniture that she could carry out of the White House. She campaigned all across New York under constant sniper fire, making new friends. And because of her relentless campaigning, Hillary was the first woman politician to discover her new home of Manhattan was really an island. Now, after losing the nomination in 2008, Hillary returned to the Senate, but not for long. President Obama, her former rival, wanted her to be his Secretary of State. Now, when the Iranian people were fighting for their freedom in 2009, it was Hillary and President Obama that decided that helping them would upset the deeply religious Iranian leaders and hamper their plan to bring peaceful atomic energy to their own people, and perhaps even export that atomic energy to other countries in the region, like Israel. Other Democrats had launched wars without congressional approval all the time, but Hillary was the first woman to break that glass ceiling as well, creating the modern, peaceful, happy Libya and Syria and Egypt that we see today. The woman who was called too ambitious now met with kings and sultans and prime ministers in a total of 112 countries. Wherever she went, her message was the same. What difference does it make? What difference does it make if the Libyan ambassador calls for more security for months and then gets slaughtered while she watched on TV? What difference does it make if a filmmaker went to jail for a year to cover up the fact that men fought and died for 6 hours because of it? What difference does it make if she put 1,200 highly classified top secret and above top secret documents on a private server in a bathroom to avoid freedom of information requests regarding the culture of corruption in the Clinton Foundation? What difference does it make if she claims to be a champion of women's rights and says that every accusation of sexual assault has to be believed, and then spends her entire career destroying the lives of the women that claimed her husband abused and even raped them? What difference does it make when she loves Bill and America and politics as much as she does? Now, men said that a girl couldn't do any of these things, but once again, Hillary proved them all wrong. No one gets to stop a girl from being the greatest person she can be. Hillary thinks everyone deserves that chance. All her life, she's fought for fairness and compassion, and the cruelest words and wrongest barriers have not been enough to hold her back. And for a lifetime of endless work in service to the poor and fighting against income inequality, all she and Bill have to show for their love of each other and America and politics is $111 million. They said girls couldn't run multi-million dollar felonious treasonous power for money scams, but Hillary refused to listen. Once again, Hillary proved all the boys wrong and just worked long and hard and did what no woman has ever done before. And no matter what Hillary does next, if she wants to change the world, she will find a way. She will do anything. Anything. So that she can continue to love Bill and America and politics as much as she does.
And that is our man, Bill Whittle, talking about the front runner, the odds-on favorite to be president of the United States. Interesting enough, and I thought you would enjoy that little story from Mr. Bill Whittle. I think that. It's interesting that with everything that they have done and she has done, and this is not innuendo, this is not false accusations, these are all facts, that we still have her on top of the heap as far as the next president. I think that has to question our judgment sometimes. I think it's just something to take a look at. But as we say, it was our friend Bill Whittle. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. And of course, I urge you to check out BubbaTrading.com. I've got great programs for you. We are in the way of protecting your money, helping you do that, or helping you become a better trader. And one of the things of being a better trader is when you choose the software that you can use, we recommend Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. It is the platform of choice that I use, and we do get a special break there on pricing, so certainly it behooves you to check it out and email me, and I'll help you get hooked up. In the meantime, if you ever miss an episode, you can go to libertytalk.fm on demand, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be seeing you right here back after the break. Make sure you go get some coffee. Be back. We'll be back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
In other words...
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and put you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Hear that whistle, it's 10 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you on this glorious Thursday of cold, icy, snowy Chicago. But as we started today, and I think that it's, you know, Apple's been in the news and a lot of things going on. And let's go to Bill Whittle and company to find out what their opinion on this whole situation is. Let's go to Bill Whittle right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Green, and this is a special three-part trifecta on the future of privacy, of free speech, and the free press, seen through the lens of three wildly different stories about Apple versus the FBI, Twitter versus conservative users, and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, their party's frontrunners, versus the mainstream media. Now, we've got a lot to go through in just three segments. Let's get Scott Ott and Bill Whittle on here right now so we can talk about Apple, the FBI, encryption, and terrorism. Gents, you know the story. On December 2nd of last year, Saeed Rizwan Farooq and Tashfeen Malik showed up at a San Bernardino County Department of Public Health holiday party, armed to the teeth, and in the space of 4 minutes, shot and killed 14 people, wounded another 24 before being killed by police, perhaps on their way home to rearm and reload. In the ensuing investigation, the FBI got hold of Farooq's Apple iPhone 5C, which may very well contain contact information with members of the Islamic State or other terrorist organizations. Then, as the New York Times reported, the Justice Department had secured a search warrant for the phone owned by Mr. Farooq's former employer, which consented to the search. Because Apple declined to voluntarily provide, in essence, the keys to its encryption technology, federal prosecutors said they saw little choice but to get a judge to compel Apple's assistance. Mr. Cook said the order amounted to creating a backdoor to bypass Apple's strong encryption standards, something we simply do not have and something we consider too dangerous to create. Now, I should add that Apple did turn over Farooq's iCloud backup of his phone, which Apple does hold the digital key to, but the company insists it can't be coerced into creating a brand new tool which could be used to hack anybody's iPhone, even yours. And if Apple caves, so will Google, so will Microsoft, and anyone else making smartphone operating systems. On the other hand, what if the FBI could stop the next terror attack? Scott, I'm not going to pretend this is easy. Where do you draw the line between liberty and security?
You never draw it very well, I'll tell you that, because, you know, obviously the biggest concern people have is for their own lives. And that's legit. I mean, people want to know if there's another terror attack coming. I think it may be wishful thinking to think that if only the FBI were able to have a backdoor to your iPhone, then we would have to worry less about terror attacks. Something tells me that the terrorists would work around that workaround. What's perplexing to me is that the employer that owned the phone, okay, that wasn't Syed's personal telephone, it was his work phone, And his employer owned that phone, and it is a government job. And when you are communicating in government work, all of your communications should be available in a Freedom of Information request. So they would have had to have access to that phone. It mystifies me that an employer would distribute a phone to which they could not get access should they be required to get it for their own needs.
So you're saying that Farouk being allowed to put his own encryption on a government iPhone is sort of like keeping your own private server in a bathroom if you're a federal employee.
Oh, there you go. Well, I guess it's ordinary then. It's normal. Okay, I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Yeah. Only the little people can't get away with that. All right, as I said, it's a tough case, and it doesn't really lend itself very well to 10-minute video segments. And it's also a weird case. I've seen Apple haters lining up behind Tim Cook, and I've seen right-wingers who hate the Obama Justice Department lining up behind the Obama Justice Department on this one. Now, deep below the FBI versus Apple headlines is an obscure law from 1789 known as the All Writs Act, revised in 1911 and several times since then. Now, the text of the act says, the Supreme Court and all courts established by act of Congress may issue all writs necessary or appropriate in aid of their respective jurisdictions and agreeable to the usages and principles of law. Bill, does the All Writs Act give U.S. Magistrate Judge Sherry Pym the power to compel Apple to divert its own software engineers and who knows how much money in order to break the security measures Apple had promised its users that not even Apple could break? Should a judge have that power? And what about the victims of San Bernardino or future terror attacks?
I was assured when I signed up for the show that there would be no math. I don't know how to answer that question, Steve. It's not that I don't have an opinion on it. I just don't know how to answer it. Let me just dumb it down to a level I can understand here.
Sure.
We have a situation that's a little different than most others. Starting to feel like Hillary Clinton here. Here's the problem. We do have, and have had since the beginning of the Republic, a legal infrastructure for obtaining information from people that is private information, given probable cause that they've either committed a crime or that they were in the conspiracy to commit a crime. These are what our Fourth Amendment protections are all about. The general assumption has been, up until the present, that if there was sufficient evidence that you could convince a judge to issue a warrant, then you could essentially invade this wall of privacy that everyone is presumably entitled to based on probable cause. So far, so good. We do this every day. Every time they write a search warrant, and they write thousands a day, this is legal and it's appropriate, and it's been pretty much well handled throughout the history of the Republic. We got a different problem here, and this is not a slippery slope problem. This is, in fact, cracking a wall problem. This is going into territory that no one's ever been in before. I have to tell you, of all the things that most surprised me about this story, is I am quite utterly shocked and remarkably pleased that my phone is as secure as it appears to be. I had no idea that it was this secure. I thought Apple could just say, yeah, you want Bill's information? No problem. So look, I've said this many times before, as much as I'd like to catch every single one of these sons of guns, we have in fact got a problem in this country. The problem is not terrorism. We can survive terrorism. We can survive terrorism. We can survive this socialist waltz we're doing. We can survive the Russians and the Chinese and all the rest of it. The one thing this country cannot survive is the idea that we are not free to speak our mind. If we have to constantly live as Americans in constant fear that the NSA is listening to everything we say, if we have to register as independents because if we register as Republicans, we fear an IRS tax audit, if everything we say on the phone we assume to be listened to by the government, that is a far, 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 far bigger threat to the American ideal than a bunch of 7th century savages with AK-47s, especially among an armed population. In my opinion, the value of getting this information is immeasurably outweighed by the danger that this provides. And it, as I say, it's not a slippery slope. It's not like, well, you know, once we do it once, it's done. And once it's done, anybody can do it. And whether they do it or not is not really the issue. The issue is, do we think they're doing it? The issue is, do we feel secure in our letters and our papers? Do we feel secure having a conversation with somebody or putting information on our phone or making an online transaction and feeling like we can do this with a reasonable degree of security. I can't think of any national security issues, any that are worth giving up that American sense of being able to speak your mind freely. And that's how I'm coming down on that.
Steve, all right. Can I throw something in?
Yeah, Scott.
It just occurred to me that this case is peculiar because we've got the dead bodies and the phone. Okay, we actually caught the guy who everybody acknowledges was the guy who did, and the wife that did the shooting. But I could easily see a circumstance where we didn't catch the guy. I could see a circumstance where the FBI went around his office and said, "We need all your phones. We need to see everybody's phone here, and we need to, you know," where you don't have such a clear-cut case. And that's the problem, because once this door is opened, it is permanently opened, and we've basically said to the FBI and to anybody else in the government, to the IRS perhaps, we've said, our lives are transparent to your gaze.
Yeah, you know, folks, Bill and Scott have done such a great job of covering the big issues. I want to bring this down to a more personal level. Imagine you're on a business trip and your flight is landing at your destination. After spending several hours in the air incommunicado, you reach for your phone to take it out of airplane mode, and that's when you realize it's gone. It's lost. You left it somewhere at the other airport. That's your smartphone. It has your financial information on it. It's got a message from your wife or your husband saying when and where they'd be going for lunch. It has your home address. It has the names of your children and the elementary school they attend. Yeah. But you don't worry, because you're using the latest version of Apple iOS or Google Android, and your phone is fully encrypted, and you know your data is safe, 100%. The only thing you really have to worry about is the minor hassle of replacing your phone and restoring the encrypted backup, which is really, in the big picture, no big deal. But if Apple is forced to break its own encryption, and Google will surely be forced to do the same, the data on your phone will no longer be secure. Not from government trying to stop terrorists, not from thieves, not from pedophiles, not from a nosy cop with nothing better to do. Now, I buy the best handguns and rifles I can afford, and I learn how to operate them safely and effectively in order to protect my family and my property. I also buy the best encryption available to me, and I've learned how to use it safely and effectively in order, again, to protect my family and my property. Constitutionally, should there be any difference between the two? It's food for thought, I hope. Stay tuned for part two, the future of free speech on the internet, and Twitter's shadow war on conservative users. Until then, for Bill Whittle and Scott Ott, I'm Steve Green.
And that was our guys, Bill Whittle and crew. We're going to stop by here for a break, but make sure if you ever miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm, join the now over 200,000 people who download the program every single day on a monthly basis. We look forward to seeing you right back here after the break. This is the Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horowitz, and we will be right back. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show on this Thursday, March the 3rd. And we're having so much fun with Bill Whittle and gang. Let's get back to him. We go from Hillary to Apple, now to Twitter. Let's go.
Hollywood star Adam Baldwin left Twitter on Monday, giving the social media giant a massive middle finger salute on his way out the door. Today, you'll learn why. Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Green, and this is a special three-part trifecta on the future of privacy, of free speech, and the free press, seen through the lens of three wildly different stories. In part one, we looked at the future of your right to privacy as Apple fights the FBI over strong encryption. In part three, we'll look at just how free our free press really is. But today, it's free speech online as Twitter wages war against its users and against its shareholders. With me for that, of course, your trifecta stalwarts, Bill Whittle and Scott Ott. Gentlemen, last week, conservative journalist and author Stacey McCain was banned from Twitter, although the company refused to say exactly why. Stacey switched to his other account, which he'd created to promote his latest book a while back. Then Twitter suspended that account over the weekend, again, with no explanation. But we might just know the reason. A few weeks ago, Twitter announced its Trust and Safety Council, which sounds, well, a little bit like the French Revolution's Committee on Public Safety, which, of course, used to silence its critics with the guillotine. Anyway, Twitter Safety Council consists of nothing, literally nothing, but left-wing groups with, let's just say, iffy records on free speech. One member is Gamergate-fighting feminist Anita Sarkeesian, who is no fan of Stacey McCain. They've had numerous public run-ins. And as Robert Trusinski wrote in The Federalist on Monday, it sure looks like the moment Twitter gave Sarkeesian the power to do so, she started blackballing her critics. Now, Adam Baldwin, you probably know him as star of The Last Ship, Chuck, Full Metal Jacket, Firefly, and easily my favorite villain on Angel. He deleted his entire Twitter timeline in support of Stacey, except for one last tweet linking to that Robert Trusinski column, abandoning nearly a quarter of a million followers and taking all of his content with him. Bill, I'm just an online acquaintance of Adam's, but you two, I understand, are pretty close. Did he do the right thing? Do you think you'll follow him out the door?
This is a tough one. Look, I think without question he did the right thing as far as his own conscience is concerned and as far as his statement is concerned. And in general, I agree with him completely. I know Adam relatively well. By the way, the interesting thing about Adam Baldwin, I met him, 2008, I guess. And he always plays these machine-gunning idiots, you know? I mean, he's always the big, tough, stupid guy. But he is, without question, the most well-read person I've ever met. He will tell you who the Federalist Papers went to when they were doing their research, you know? I mean, he's an astonishingly smart, incredibly well-read guy. He's the exact antithesis of most of the characters he plays. So I have mixed feelings about this. First of all, I have no mixed feelings about what Adam did. I mean, he had an enormous amount of followers, huge amount of followers. He's a real presence on Twitter, and he just walked out, and that's fine. And the more people do this, the lower their stock is going to go. As you know, the Twitter stock is just tanking and continues to tank. My only concern about this was something that I had some thoughts about. And then just before we taped today, I saw Steve Cruiser here. And as you know, Steve Cruiser has a huge Twitter following. And I asked him if he was going to leave along with everybody else. And he said, no, I think that's what they want us to do. He said, I'm going to just keep poking him in the eye until I get banned. There's something to be said for that. You know, as much as I admire Adam's stand on this, and it's a principled stand, and I don't question it or disagree with it, on some level, this is what the fascists want, right? This is what these liberal fascists want, is they want to control all the speech. And so if they're going to shadow ban you and if they're going to, you know, shut down your account, that's one thing. But if they get all the conservatives to shut down their own accounts, it's kind of mission accomplished as far as they're concerned. The flip side of this argument is if everybody who's a conservative leaves and everybody goes with them, and Twitter has a reputation for being this giant little jackbooted pit of political correctness, then their stock is going to continue to tank. Somebody's going to come up with an alternative, and, you know, we'll go there.
I can hardly wait to jump ship, but I'm going to take Cruiser's advice. I'm going to wait till they kick me off. It might not be long now. The justification for Twitter Star Chamber is to make people feel safe about expressing themselves, but that safety only seems to go in one direction. Accounts like Kill Donald Trump are still active, and Twitter sat idly by last year when director Joss Whedon, creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and an outspoken feminist himself, he was hounded off Twitter by other feminists like Sarkeesian for not being feminist enough. British author, actor, and comedian Stephen Fry also left out of frustration, completely deleting his account. That's what his page looks like now. Because left-wing groups, and Fry's a lefty himself, they wouldn't let him be funny anymore, not without hounding him to death. And now we've got something called shadow banning. Twitter hasn't admitted this, but users are noticing that other users' tweets aren't showing up in their timelines or in search results anymore. People like author Larry Correa, who also left Twitter on Monday, Iowa Hawk Dave Burge, who I believe is the funniest man on the internet, and maybe even me. I've had several followers tell me my tweets have stopped showing up for them. So apparently Twitter is silently silencing us, removing conservatives and libertarians from the public timeline without word or explanation. All of this done in secret. Scott, is that any way to run a social media platform which was built, ostensibly anyway, to promote engagement and free speech?
Well, you know, this is kind of mystifying because this new leftist tactic of simply cutting off somebody's Twitter account or shadow banning them and keeping their tweets from being seen by other people in their timelines doesn't sound nearly as fun as the old-fashioned method of getting a mob together and hounding someone off Twitter. I mean, that was a lot more fun and interactive and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure. I guess maybe we should see it. Those of us on the right should see see it as a positive sign, because I guess the whole hounding thing wasn't working out as well as they would have liked. And so now they've got to do a new method, which is simply to pull the plug. I'm not sure how they make this distinction. The letter I saw that was allegedly from Twitter to Robert Stacey McCain said that it was because of particular abuse. I think the word particular was in there, like he was targeting
directed, I think
some
it was
individual. Yeah. And so we still don't know exactly why this has happened, but the stuff you see on Twitter, holy cow, I think he has a First Amendment case here, and he ought to bring it. He ought to basically say, look, if you're going to apply these rules, fine. Apply them to everybody. And if not, who owns the internet anyway? I mean, doesn't the government own that? Shouldn't the government own the internet? Shouldn't the government enforce the First Amendment?
I never thought of that. Sue them. Yes, of course, sue them. Sue them and sue them and sue them. And there must be any number of conservative attorneys who would take this case. It's a clear First Amendment violation. Sue them. And even if you lose, the publicity is worth it. Damage the brand. You know, make them change their management. Their stock has gone down to a quarter of what it used to be. Let's drive it down to a tenth of what it used to be. Sue them. Make it public. Run the publicity machine. Call them out and fight.
Yeah, just don't sue them and expect to get any money, because Twitter doesn't have any anymore. Look, folks, Twitter is a private company. If CEO Jack Dorsey wants to turn control of his platform over to the Orwellian Trust and Safety Council, well, I guess that's his right. Although a quick look at their share price shows, as Bill and Scott both intimated, that investors think he's out of his progressive mind. Now, Facebook, on the other side, is hugely profitable, but I don't spend much time there because, as we've known for years, Facebook also manipulates its users' timelines. I don't have a whole lot of use for that. So is it too much to ask, when we have this amazing tool to work with, this incredible invention called the internet, is it too much to ask for a place where anyone can say anything to anyone else without fear of banishment or shadow banning or timeline manipulation? Now, I'm a content creator, not a platform builder, so I'm not going to create this thing myself, but I will go to whoever builds the freest and funnest social media platform yet. I don't know what or where that is, but I hope if we ever do find it, all of you on the right and the left will join me there.
And that's our guys to bring it to you, and that'll do it for today. Make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. And again, if you ever miss an episode, all you have to do is go to libertytalk.fm. Every show is available there on demand. And we just surpassed the 200,000 download per month. So I want you to be one of them. Go to Bubba Trading and check it out, bubbatrading.com. I've got great stuff there for you. I've got great articles. I've also got some great products that will help you become a better trader, a better investor, and make you more money. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.